somewhat different problem, though. Suppose we're interested in, suppose we can divide an area of surface into a number of grids, and we ask the question, how many deposits are in any particular grid? And what that diagram is suggesting is that there will be a large number of grids, as indicated by the tall vertical bar, that have no deposits, a substantially smaller number of grids which have one deposit, and so on. At any rate, that's the nature of probability functions, and we're going to be spending a fair amount of time considering them, because what I'm interested in exploring is whether or not such variables as the size of crude petroleum reservoirs found during an exploration program can be characterized by probability functions, and if so, what use can be made of such statistical regularities? Specifically, how can models be formulated that will increase our understanding of the economics of petroleum exploration? Now, there are in the literature a number of hypotheses that state in probabilistic form various characteristics of mineral occurrence. And a primary and pioneering piece of literature in this area was the work of the French economist Allais, who was concerned with mineral occurrence in the Sahara. And indeed, the two functions which I've illustrated on the board, figures 1 and 2, reflect Allais' work. He suggested and proceeded to apply the notion that, first of all, the occurrence of mineral deposits, he was interested in hard rock minerals throughout the Sahara region, might be characterized, if you considered separate grids of area, as figure 2 suggests, and that the size of deposits once they were found might have the characteristics shown in the function portrayed in figure 1. Now, I want to put aside this kind of hypothesis in order to suggest what I think the economic problem involved is. And let me turn to that. By the nature of the process, as I mentioned a moment ago, the results of petroleum exploration can't be known in advance. And postulating that the output variable, reserves of crude discovered in a particular area by investment in exploration, call this R, is stochastic, that is, it occurs with an element of chance, we'd like to be able to estimate the incremental value of discoveries, call this delta R, or change in R, for successive increments of investment. And we'd also like to know the dispersion of possible values of delta R. For a particular region, the increment of reserves found will depend on such factors as the natural endowment of the region and the available finding technology. This is just the surface of the iceberg. On the assumption that the best indicators provided by geophysical reconnaissance are explored first, we should, when defining the probability function for new points, for new finds at any point in time, allow for depletion of the stock. That is, the fact that the best prospects have already been drilled. On the other hand, as exploration proceeds over time in a region, there is an accumulation of geologic knowledge. Perhaps as a result, incremental reserves found per dollar of investment will increase over time. And it's this sort of possible behavior of the returns to exploration that I'm talking about in the diagram in what is your upper left-hand corner of the board here. I show two possibilities. The one designated A suggests that geological techniques, exploration techniques, are such that in fact the best finds, the best traps are found first. And once the process begins, it's strictly downhill. Smaller amounts of reserves are found for successive increments or successive number of wildcat wells drilled. Of course, that shouldn't be shown as a straight line. Obviously, I would have a whole scatter of points there. But the suggestion is that the general trend of returns to exploration in an area would be downhill. That's not necessarily the case. as I suggested, you might have a situation such as B, where knowledge increased as exploration progressed, with the result that initially there would be increasing increments of discoveries. More oil would be found for successive tens of wells drilled, but eventually the pressure of diminishing returns is surely going to set in. Now, a theory of the returns to exploration in a region would afford some method for making useful forecasts. In Figure 3, we talk about the inputs to exploration simply as investment or number of wildcat wells, and quite clearly a good model of exploration is going to break this down, separate the different components of an exploration program. But the point is that if we could develop with, in a statistical sense, some kind of relations such as those shown in Figure 3, we'd have some basis for absorbing information as it was generated by exploration programs and making predictions. If we actually had information on curves such as those, integration, that is to say measuring the area under those curves, would afford an estimate of total reserves. And similarly, if you take any particular slice of that, that would suggest a prediction of the likely returns for the next increment of exploration. And perhaps what's even more important, but which doesn't show on that diagram, is that a model which depicted the returns to exploration, this delta R, as a stochastic variable, would give us some idea of the dispersion of possible results. That is to say, we speak of expected quality of reserves, implying the need to specify the probability of finding various quantities. And we'd like to get into a knowledge of what the nature of these probabilities are in order to try to say something about the risks inherent in exploration. Now, when it comes to formulating a model which will do this sort of thing, that is to say, generate information of the sort that's suggested by Figure 3, there are two principal approaches in the literature. One of them arises from the work of Arps and Roberts, and I'm afraid my blackboard writing is more illegible than I had thought, but I wanted to suggest that the general drift of the models which they used by the equation which does rather bedraggledly appear in the upper right-hand corner. Now, let me just concern myself with the designations over those variables. I simply copied that from the paper, and I'm not going to try to explain the different terms. The basic proposition is very simple. It suggests that on the left-hand side, the variable we're interested in is the change in the number of known fields of a particular size. And that's really what all of the notation on the left of the equation boils down to. It says, if we drill a particular additional number of wildcat wells, how many of those will be productive and will find deposits of a particular size? And the proposition that Arps and Roberts advanced was that that was going to be proportional to what I show on the right-hand side there. Specifically, that it was going to depend on the number of undiscovered fields of that size, and that's the large term on the extreme right-hand side. It was also going to depend on the size of a field, that is the proposition that there's a greater likelihood of finding a bigger field than a smaller field. And of course, it would also be dependent on the quality of the finding technology that was available. And as is so often the case, that shows up as the coefficient alpha. At any rate, they formulated a model of that sort. It's been given considerable subsequent attention by Krabbe and Kaufman in references which I've cited in the paper. The usefulness of a relation of that sort is that if in fact it is correct, an equation of that type can be integrated. And if you can say anything about the probability of finding a well, that is of the success ratio, as Arps and Roberts assumed that you could, then you can extrapolate from particular data as to how many wells, how many fields of a particular size have been discovered after, say, 1,000 exploratory wells have been drilled. This model extrapolates to the number that will ultimately be found, or if not necessarily the number that will be found when an indefinitely large number of wildcats have been drilled, it would forecast the number that would be found for, let's say, the next 1,000 wildcats. That's one type of model. Comment very, very briefly on that, although for a really adequate explanation of it, I have to insist that you look at the original work that they've done on it. How completely does that model specify the returns to exploration? Well, employing the relation which it postulates between discoveries of pools of a given size class and the number available and their aerial extent, the model really, or essentially, extrapolates the rate of decay in the number of discoveries in order to forecast the limiting number of discoveries. As I've already said, it doesn't say anything at all about what the initial success ratio is. That has to be determined from other data. Krabbe, in some recent work he's done on this, treats alpha as an unknown, that is the quality of technology, and proposes some estimation methods whereby we could study, as exploration went on in a particular period, whether our techniques in fact were getting better or worse. That is to say, he brings in knowledge explicitly. Now this particular model in its present state seems to us to be essentially a projection model and possibly useful for forecasting trends in mature oil-producing regions. What would be its usefulness in an area such as the Arctic? Well, it'll be many years before sufficient statistics will be in hand to permit estimates of future returns to exploration based on estimates of ultimate reserves and trends in technical efficiency. It looks to us, in other words, as though to apply this model to a particular region, at the present, we can't do much until we've got some data to extrapolate from. I mentioned that there was a second approach to analyzing economically the returns from exploration, and that's the one which can be attributed to Allais. It was originated by Allais. We've already alluded to that briefly. Let me go into that in somewhat more detail, because that's the one that we've chosen to follow in the work that we've been doing. As I said, Allais started out with two propositions, two hypotheses. He said that for a particular area, the occurrence, let's put it in petroleum terms, the occurrence of pools of crude would follow the distribution that I've depicted in the lower panel, the Poisson distribution. That is to say, if we divided an area by putting a grid on it, pictured a checkerboard pattern, that the number of pools appearing in any particular checkerboard square would be characterized statistically by that kind of a distribution. Once a pool was found, once we had a discovery, well, how big would it be? What's the size of it? Well, Allais advanced another hypothesis on that score. He said that given that a pool is found, the distribution that I've shown in the upper panel, which is the he took to be the log normal distribution, applies. That is to say, there is a certain probability that the field will be at least 100 million barrels. Probability is a certain probability that it'll be between 100 and 150 and so forth. And he applied these two hypotheses by looking at mineralization throughout the world, evaluating the parameters of the occurrence distribution, the lower distribution, and the size distribution, the upper distribution, and assuming that these could simply be extrapolated to the Sahara area. And this allowed him to figure out what would be the likely returns to any particular exploration program. He came up with some rather interesting findings as to how big a program had to be in order to achieve some minimum probability of being successful. Well, that's the clue to the kind of work that we've been working on. In the far panel again, the very simple expression that you see labeled equation 2 is the variable that our model is interested in. Equation 2 is the total amount of oil in place in any particular area. And what that simple term says is that that's going to be the summation of the small y sub i's, that is the amount in all the individual pools, and of course that is summed over the number of individual pools that there are, capital N. Now each of the y's, that is the size of a particular deposit, is a random variable. Is taken to be a member of the population described in figure 1. N itself is a random variable. The number of deposits in a particular area is a random variable, and that could be assumed to follow the Poisson distribution shown in figure 2. Well, once we decided to work with this kind of a model, we of course were faced with testing the proposition that occurrence of petroleum worked this way at all. We had at our disposal the complete record of exploratory drilling, of wildcat drilling in the province of Alberta, so that the first proposition was to see if these two hypotheses, that is related to the occurrence of pools and their size distribution, could be confirmed or denied as a result of the Alberta data. Most of this we've reported elsewhere. I'll just make one quick comment, and that is that one finding that we did come up with was that the notion that the Poisson distribution was a good way of describing the occurrence of reserves certainly did not apply to petroleum, or at least to petroleum in Alberta. We found a distribution that did work, that's the negative binomial distribution, so that we could retain the general form of the model, but using a different probability function than the one which Allais had suggested. In the paper, and I didn't try to put these results on the board, I include a table which compares the predictions made assuming or on the basis of this, of the negative binomial probability function, of the number of pools occurring in a particular grid area with what in fact was observed in fact, what was observed in actuality. And the comparison is quite striking. That is to say, if you consider the number of areas throughout the province that had zero deposits, the actual number that had zero as compared with the number predicted assuming this distribution was negative binomial is very close. There is some evidence, in other words, that using a model to describe the random variable Z, the number of as I indicated, the reserves per grid area, using a model which makes use of two probability functions, one to describe the size once found, and the other the number of pools or occurrences that are likely to be found, we were quite successful in reconstructing the Alberta data. Now, if such a model as this has some validity ex post for Alberta, it brings to mind the immediate question of, is it of any use in an area such as the North Slope area in forecasting what's going to be there? Well, the Allais use of the method was to simply extrapolate parameters from other areas and assuming that the behavior would be the same in the new area. And this poses some pretty specific dangers. Let me comment on them. First of all, well-explored areas is a very relative term. To look at a petroleum region such as Alberta or Texas and to try to characterize it as well-explored is a pretty slippery kind of job. Take two areas, possibly with equally promising geologic indicators, one of them close to possible consuming centers, perhaps likely that the reservoirs are shallow, not too far below the surface of the ground. Take another area with exactly the same geologic indicators, but worse on both counts, remote from markets and with the fields deep. At any particular time, one area is going to be explored to a considerable greater degree than the other. There's really no meaning to the term well explored. So that this raises the question of whether our findings in Alberta would have any use at all in making predictions about the returns to exploration in the Arctic or any other area. Now, what we suggest is that the process by which petroleum reservoirs are formed may be the same in two areas, so that a model of the same functional form as Alberta might apply to the Arctic. In other words, the application of the distribution functions might apply, although it would be necessary to estimate new parameters which characterize the Arctic region rather than simply applying the ones that related to Alberta. Now, let's consider this problem of applying Alberta parameters. Suppose that the regulatory agencies in Alaska are eager to establish as good a prediction as they can of the oil in place in this region, and they have absolutely no data at any particular time that relates specifically to drilling on the North Slope. Can they get any help from what's happened in Alberta? Well, before they can, two conditions would have to be met. First of all, there'd have to be evidence of geologic similarity, so that to a first approximation, we could assume that the density of indicators, that is, of drilling sites, would be the same in the second area. Second, since known reserves depend on intensity of exploration, the extrapolation of a particular set of parameter values to a new basin implies a forecast of the reserves that will have been found in that basin when it's explored as intensively as the reference area. That is, all indicators of comparable quality are investigated in each area. In order to meet the first of these conditions, it's necessary to introduce more geology when specifying the model. In our first empirical testing, we considered the spatial occurrence of petroleum reservoirs in the entire sedimentary region of Alberta. This restriction affected the parameters of the negative binomial distribution, inclusion of many areas where the finds were considered to be very unlikely and where, in fact, no finds have been made, may not affect subsequent estimates of the total number of reservoirs in Alberta, but it does affect estimates of the number of finds in any given region. Restricting the area being sampled on geologic grounds also results in estimates of the number of reservoirs in a chosen area, which should exhibit lower dispersion than would be possible if no control were used to define the area. To try to pin down a little more the particular province that we were looking at, we adopted a very gross geologic classification for the Alberta area, and that, which perhaps is illegible entirely to any of you sitting in the back of the room, is on the lower panel to your left. We differentiated between sand traps and limestone structures, and within the latter, we identified reefs, other structures, and then broke the reefs into biostromes, biohermes. We were interested in finding out whether, by introducing this, admittedly, I suppose, to a geologist, still horrifyingly gross classification, we could improve the kind of results that we were getting. Now, the report that I include in the paper of this, and again, I guess I suffer because I had thought these papers would be distributed, is rather too complicated to hand out, so I'll quickly sketch what those results are. Rather too complicated to describe. But what we did find was that in testing to see whether number, the distribution shown in figure one, the log normal distribution, could describe the size of deposits, and then applying this classification. Indeed, when we took a very fine classification, that is one in which we might expect the geologic processes underlying the formation of the reservoir rock to be similar. Take, for example, limestone reefs, biostrome type of the Devonian period, for example, that we did get much better fits than we had with any previous tests. That is, the hypothesis that the field sizes of this particular sort of field were, as shown by the function depicted in figure one, were supported statistically. By contrast, when we started lumping things together, like talking about all sand traps in the province, we couldn't find statistical confirmation that these distribution functions applied. This suggested to us, or suggests to us, that the technique that we'd used previous to that was just a bit too broad-gauged, and that if any progress was going to be made at all, we had to bring in some geology, at least to the point of getting a classification so that what we were talking about made some sense in terms of the geologic processes of formation. Now, I digressed a little bit because I want to return to this question of applying results gained from another region to forecast what's likely to be found in a new area. As I say, the first point would be that the technique can be improved to the extent that we can get a comparison between the geology of the old region and the new region. That's what we're driving at here. It's not enough to just say that maybe the North Slope is an extension of the type of structure in the Alberta sedimentary basin. We've got to be much more specific about what, in fact, it is. And the other question that I raised regarding the extrapolation of parameter values had to do with the intensity of exploration. If available knowledge supports the assumption that maybe the two areas are geologically similar, then projections of the petroleum in place for the new region based on extrapolating old parameters, in this case Alberta, would be valid only if a comparable number of wildcats had been drilled. That is, we'd be comparing reserves that will be found when this area receives the amount of exploration that Alberta already has. Now, the usefulness of predicting petroleum potential in a region by applying parameters estimated in other regions is limited, and that's probably not surprising. In this, as elsewhere, you probably get what you pay for. A more significant possible application of this sort of model lies in applying statistical sampling techniques to the analysis and collection of data in a new area. Once a number of wildcats has been drilled in a region, the results can be used to modify the parameter values that were originally assumed. In other words, if the hypothesis that a model of this sort, at least of this functional form, is valid for petroleum in a region, then we can turn loose the techniques of statistics. We can attempt to analyze or even plan the drilling in the area in order to get the largest possible information from it. This information in turn can be converted into improved estimates of what the parameters are in that particular region. That it, one step further along the road toward characterizing what is the likely result of the next increment of effort in exploratory drilling. What I have tried to do is to simply give the flavor of the kind of work that we're undertaking here. And since a good part of my comments, and certainly of even the more detailed paper, involves raising questions and discussing possibilities, the usefulness of a concluding summary is probably questionable. But let me make a few comments anyway. It suggests to us that there, or at least this work has suggested to us, that there's a substantial accumulation of evidence to support that there are statistical regularities in the occurrence of petroleum and other minerals. Specification of these in the form of probability functions permits the construction of economic models of exploration. These models can be applied to various questions. In the Arps-Kaufman-Krabbe model, it becomes possible to estimate incremental returns to wildcat drilling and total reserves in place. For the LA-type model, which we've been working on, the most promising application seems to be in describing the returns to exploration in a new basin based on the extrapolation of data from other areas, and perhaps more important, in devising sampling procedures such that the new basin can be characterized quickly from a limited number of drilling results. The basic difference in approach of the two types of models, seems, therefore, to relate to the different type of problems addressed. The first concentrates on exploration as a process in a basin, that is the ARPS type model, and is applicable to mature regions. The second is directed toward new regions where there's little information upon which to base forecasts and where quick and efficient accumulation of knowledge is important. Our feeling is that the ARPS type model, Arps-Kaufman-Krabbe model, in its present state of development is subject to criticism for having hypotheses which are too general to be tested. We feel, on the other hand, that the most fundamental criticism of the LA-type model is that little attention is paid to the unfolding process of exploration in a region. On the whole subject of models of exploration, certainly the last returns are not in yet. To conclude, I'd point out that the study of risk and optimal strategies under risk, which is the direction that these models lead us, is an area of economics where the going is somewhat treacherous. And on this note of humility, I would issue an appeal to the geologists. The preferred way to develop a probability function, which applies to a particular phenomenon, is to derive it knowing the nature of the basic process, be it the production of defective pieces on an assembly line or the incidence of malaria. Now, we've gone about this thing the other way around, beginning by testing the fit of suggested probability functions to the observed data. Now, some of these results, statistically, are very good, such as I mentioned the fit of the negative binomial distribution to the spatial occurrence of petroleum deposits in Alberta. Similarly, the fit of the log normal distribution to the size distribution of reservoirs, particularly as we get down to the rather more, well, at least to some effort, at geologic classification, as I suggested before. These results may look good statistically, but they really won't be completely acceptable until rationalized by knowledge of the geologic processes involved. Mr. Reed.
It's plain, I think, that we will have to urge more meetings where the economist and the geologist get together. You had me pursuing lines of thought that are completely unfamiliar. Are there other questions or comments? Bill?
In a given basin, is there a minimum density of wells that you need before you have sufficient data so you can treat it statistically?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that question. We can make statements about the reliability of the results, such that the more sample data we have, the greater confidence we have in the results. I don't know if I can comment more precisely than that. Let me make one other suggestion. In looking at the Alberta data, one thing that we did discover, we ran a series of tests in which, of the many thousands of grid squares that you get if you, say, deal with a 5x5 or a 10x10 square mile grid, you simply sample randomly and then from that data try to estimate what the parameters of these distributions are. And the results of our sampling experiments, for one thing, it was quite surprising, showed considerable, in fact, complete independence of the particular areas sampled, even if they happen to fall very close to each other. That was encouraging because that reinforced the notion of using that hypothesis. But perhaps this relates to your question. One way of applying what seems to be true here would be to, if you could ideally arrange exploration, deal with a few areas which would be statistically representative of the whole population, and then from that derive parameters which ought to give you a good idea of what the total accumulation of deposits and the amount present is.
Yes.
Do I understand you to say that in the Alberta data, you're finding that on your figure 3, I guess, that we're finding a sensitivity to additional information as it comes in, or did you run your data to show the time effectiveness of the exploration that was done in Alberta versus your model? How does new information influence what I'm
asking? In the Alberta work, in fact, we have not treated the time dimension. The point I want to make when I make there, I guess, is that the real inadequacy, you see, of this Allais approach is that it's complemented or complements the ARPS approach. The ARPS approach is entirely concerned with what happens over time. In its present form, the Allais model really isn't. You're taking a snapshot at any particular point in time. So that we would expect that if you look at the fields that had been found in Alberta in 50, 55, 60, and 65, we could verify the functional forms of these probability functions, but you get a different set of parameters as time goes on. And so far, we don't have any model or any structure in order to explain how these parameters are changing. By contrast, the whole game in the ARPS model is using that relation shown on the far board, to try to say something about how the characteristics of finds change over time. In other words, to describe the process of exhaustion. The real challenge, I think, is to try to come up with a much more comprehensive model which embraces the good parts of both of these. Ours is, to an econometrician, ours is simply not adequately specified because we don't take into account this a mechanism for the changing parameters over time.
The hour of adjournment is rapidly approaching. Time for one more question if anybody wishes. If not, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much.